Fred Film Radio, il cinema ritrovato, Bologna, Italy.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2017 Il Cinema Ritrovato in Bologna, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Dave Kerr, who is curator in the film department of MoMA,
the Museum of Modern Art in New York City.
Yes. And is actually programmed to Stransbury Festival, which we will talk about later on. So for the next 10 minutes, I'll be joined by Dave Kerr. Lovely to have you.
Oh, great to be here.
So it's just after a screening, actually, Sherlock Holmes. And thank you very much for taking the time off to talk with us. So the first question actually just deals with MoMA. And just to talk about this wonderful institution, if you could just mention to our listeners a brief overview of what MoMA does in terms of film.
Well, in terms of film, we were the first film archive, at least the first film archive founded to collect film as art. And it was in the charter in 1929 when the museum was first formed and came into being in 1935. So it's before the BFI, before the Cinéthèque Française, before the Deutsche Reichsfilm Archiv at that point.
Yeah.
And so on. And we have a amazing collection, the core of which was gathered by our first chief curator, Iris Berry, who came over from London, where she had run the London Film Society. And she acquired original material from people like Douglas Fairbanks. We have all of his negatives. D.W. Griffith. We have all the negatives from the Biograph Company. Not all, but most. The best prints of a lot of important German films, because Iris bought them directly from the Reichsfilmarchiv in 1935. So we have the best copy of Destiny, for example, which is the one that's being used in the current reissue, and so on and so forth. It's a very dense collection. And here in Bologna, I'm presenting a series of films directed by William K. Howard that all come from our collection of the Fox Film Corporation, which is the company that preceded 20th Century Fox and was the home to Howard Hawks and John Ford and Raoul Walsh and Frank Borzage. And all of those films survived because they were saved by MoMA in the 1970s. And we are still working our way through that. And these films by William K. Howard have really not been seen in anywhere near decent copies. Well, probably since the 30s.
Right.
So it's a real privilege to be able to bring them here to Bologna, to this very receptive audience and this wonderful festival.
And that's wonderful. And let's start with that. William K. Howard. Can you tell us a little bit about this director?
Well, he's barely remembered today, but he was considered one of the great stylists and technical innovators of his time. He did, creative work with defocus cinematography, with extreme long takes, with backlighting, with silhouetting. His mind was just functioning on a very high level. I don't think even Hitchcock had achieved that level of technical proficiency by the time Howard had. There's a great cinematographer named James Wong Howe, who worked with everybody in Hollywood, won a few Oscars, died in, I think, the 70s. And when he was asked near the end of his life who was the most creative director he ever worked with, he said William K. Howard, stumping everyone. And the film, one of the films he worked on with Howard, is called Transatlantic, which is a real masterpiece. And we were lucky enough to be able to preserve and restore that, and presenting that here in Bologna.
That's the wonderful work of MoMA, is preserving these films, but also exhibiting them as well.
Yeah, we have a very active exhibition program. We run 362 days a year in three theaters, between 4 and 8 films a day.
Wow.
Yeah, I think Cinémathèque Française does a little bit more than we do, but we're right up there in sheer numbers.
Yeah. Can you just to talk about Howard again, would you like to maybe tell us a little bit about a few of the titles in this program?
Yeah, Transatlantic is probably his masterpiece, in my opinion. That was a very difficult restoration because the original American release image no longer exists. So we had to reconstruct it using three export versions, the French, the Italian, and the Spanish, and what was then called the International Silent version, which in fact has music and sound effects, but no dialogue. And that was meant to be dubbed in your local language, right, whatever. And then we had the English language soundtrack, and of course none of them match. So we took bits and pieces from each one and matched them as best we could to the English soundtrack. Still bits of the dialogue are missing, which we had to bridge with subtitles. But the visual quality is absolutely stunning, and you can see the depth of field effects, which anticipate Citizen Kane by 11 years. And my suspicion is that Orson Welles saw this movie. There's so much in it that recalls Kane. It cannot be a coincidence. And famously, Pauline Kael claimed that Howard's 1933 film The Power and the Glory, which has a very complicated flashback structure, narratage is what they called it, had a great influence on Citizen Kane. And we're showing that later in the week. We also are showing a film called The Trial of Vivian Ware from 1932, which also has an extremely complicated flashback narrative structure, which totally disproves the notion that Pauline Kael floated, that Preston Sturges, who was the author of the screenplay for The Power and the Glory, invented that structure. It is clearly William K. Howard who developed that idea, and he starts working with flashbacks in the 20s. So I think he has there's no documentation that Welles knew these films, but it just seems too much of a coincidence that they resemble them so strongly.
Certainly he's well worth rediscovering. That's what this festival is all about.
Oh yeah, and these films are tremendously entertaining. We just came from the screening of Sherlock Holmes, again the first public screening in a very, very long time, which is, to my mind, the most entertaining Sherlock Holmes movie ever made.
One of a kind. Did he ever make another Sherlock Holmes?
Howard did not, no. The screenwriter of this film went on to write most of the Basil Rathbone films of the 40s.
Okay.
So that was obviously his calling card for that later assignment, was the dialogue in this film, which is very witty.
The dialogue in Sherlock Holmes movies always great, very brilliant.
Yeah.
So.
Bertram Millhouse is his name.
Right, yeah. Okay, so, and also you have another strand that I want to talk about. Universal Pictures, and I believe it's a continuation of last year's program. It's part two.
That's correct. Last year I brought a number of films from Universal from the late 20s and early 30s when the studio was being run by Carl Laemmle Jr., who was the son of the founder of the studio. Another figure who's never been taken seriously because he was the son of the founder. He was condescendingly called Junior Laemmle. The joke in Hollywood was the sun also rises, har, har, har. All of which obscured the fact that he was a brilliant producer and really a risk-taking, high-minded, adventurous producer, very sophisticated. And these films really have not been seen much either, kind of hiding in plain sight. No one is much more interested in seeing them. And last year that series was so successful, they asked me to do another session this year.
Right. So last year I think one of the films was King of Jazz, yeah.
Yes.
I remember that because it was stunning color and it was fantastic to look at. But this year, what's in the program?
Several highlights. An early sound film by Todd Browning, people know from Freaks, called Outside the Law, that is a really bitter, cynical, dark crime film. Very interesting, very personal to Browning in a way that his next film for Universal, a little thing called Dracula, is not. You know, I've never found that a particularly personal film for Browning, but all of his heart and soul, his twisted, sick little self is in Outside the Law.
Wow.
Wonderful movies. Whale, who was the director that Carl Laemmle most favored, partially because he'd made Frankenstein for the studio, which was a big, big success for them. But this year we're showing a kind of a Lubitschian romantic comedy called By Candlelight, and a film called The Road Back, which is a sequel to All Quiet on the Western Front that was released in 1937 and then recut in 1939 to turn it into an anti-Hitler film. And the Library of Congress in Washington has been able to reconstruct the 1937 version, which is much better, and that's what we're showing here this week.
Very good. That's really interesting. James Whale is a fascinating figure in his own right, too. Also, I think a director worth rediscovering besides his Frankenstein. He's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He did quite a bit apart from the horror movies. One of my favorites, the film he showed last year called The Kiss Before the Mirror, which is one of the most musical films I've ever seen. It's like a choreograph to a tango that you hear in the first 10 minutes with no dialogue. And you get the camera movements of the actors very precisely choreographed and beautiful filmmaking. And again, interesting film, very morally complex.
And also he helped out in other films that weren't going so well production wise. I can think of Hell's Angels, which I recently saw, and I found out that he had something to do with.
Right.
So anyways, we're out of time, but went a bit over too, but it's fascinating to talk about these things, and it's fascinating to talk about it with you, so thank you very much for
real pleasure.
Thanks a lot. This is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.